when entities engaged in terrible human rights violations promote themselves as gay-friendly to improve their public image. Israel is the country most famous for this strategy. Pinkwashing Exposed explores how pinkwashing works and what activists are doing to fight back, including activists from Seattle who succeeded in 2012 in canceling high-profile queer events, and more. Again, that's Pinkwashing Exposed. Thursday, January 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from One Green World, a local nursery offering hard-to-find fruiting plants designed to help you grow your own food and decorate your yard, deck, or patio. To order plants or their 2016, probably, color catalog, their website is onegreenworld.com, or you can reach them by phone at 1-877-353-4028. And also by The Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. And of course, the show is The Dirtbag.
We've reached the second Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock. It's time for The Dirtbag. Good morning. I'm Glenn Andreessen, here beside you now until 12 noon. Also beside me is Jim Gilbert, back from... Where the heck were you this time, Jim?
Well, this is a great trip. Korea and Russia, Eastern Russia. Went to Vladivostok, hung out with friends, checked out a lot of interesting plants. Spoke a lot of Russian, which is something I miss doing.
And no chance of the Zika virus mosquitoes there?
You know, when I got there, the trees didn't have leaves on them. This was early May. I couldn't believe it. It was like 2 months behind us.
And is it usually that far behind us?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
They have a very cold winter there. Their actually latitude is south of us. They're like Roseburg in latitude.
Oh.
But they have this continental climate, and it could get down to minus 35, minus 40, I guess, even. Ground freezes 6 feet deep sometimes.
Okay. Crazy. Well, that's a little different than here, all right. Yeah. No wonder it was 2 months behind.
And yeah. Mosquitoes were not flying.
No. All right. Well, we've got a full show today. I've got the... We've got our plant of the month. Jim's going to talk about mulberries. I don't believe we've talked about mulberries, but are they being harvested right now? It's about time.
Yeah, they're going strong.
Strong.
I mean, depends on the type, but
yeah, okay.
we have them all over the ground. I hate to say that. I need to think of a way to harvest them. And I've just thought some new ideas about that.
And we will talk about hot weather gardening. That was some brutal temperatures that we had here in the last week. And just some ideas on what to do for the plants and for you. I also did not get to honeybee swarming. This is kind of a fascinating process of what happens inside the hive in preparation for swarms and then the actual swarm. And Jim will talk more about his travels and upcoming to Italy. Did you say?
Right. On the 16th, we're going to Germany, a short stop in Germany, and then on to Italy to check out early ripening figs.
Uh-huh. Boy, mine are early ripening this year.
You actually have a ripe one?
No, not yet.
It's getting large.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's weighting the limbs down, so I'm bumping my heads on them now. My head on them now.
You know, I remember I read somewhere that April was set a record for the month for
yeah.
heat.
Yeah.
Melted all the snow in the mountains. And
just about everything has.
Yeah.
And, of course, a garden stumper at the bottom of the hour. But at any time during the hour, your gardening questions, 503-231-8187. I've got one event to talk about. I mentioned it last month, but now it's just 2.5 weeks away, and this is the Tour de Hives. Tour de Hives, ostensibly a tour of backyard apiaries on a Saturday and a Sunday, and that is the 25th and 26th here. And this is a fundraiser for the Portland Urban Beekeepers Group, PUB, which is a nonprofit organization of beekeepers that provides community advocacy and education for those interested in raising honeybees and supporting their presence in the environment. I'll give you a quote here from the Portland Urban Beekeepers president, Bill Catherall. Bees get a bum rap, but there's no reason to be afraid. Beekeepers live safely with hundreds of thousands of honeybees in the hives around our homes. Our ecosystem depends on them, our gardens thrive because of them, and our families and friends are fascinated by watching them. Each year we offer Tour de Hives as a way to educate the public about these wonderful creatures. So, it's a two-day event for, what is it, $10. You can bike on Northeast Portland on the 25th, Saturday, and then Southeast Portland on the 26th, 1 to 4, both days. With your ticket, you get a map, so you can plan your own tour route among the hives on display. Of course, Portland being Portland, some Tour de Hives hosts also have chickens or mason bees, plus beautiful gardens to admire when you go. That's a pretty cheap garden tour ticket.
I bet there's more than bees in those gardens,
indeed,
too.
Right. So even if you're, the bees are, but the gardens will be good because most beekeepers like to provide for their friends there. All right. June 25th and 26th, you can get more information at website tourdehives.com, TOURDEHIVES, tourdehives.com. And I'll have my garden on the tour on Saturday. That's the Northeast. Okay. That's that.
Yeah, and you know, we should also mention for other gardening things, there's no very specific event coming up, big-time event, but the Home Orchard Society has at the Arboretum a number of different things they're doing, and you can go to the homeorchardsociety.org website and learn about opportunities to visit the Arboretum and
help out at the Arboretum, I think.
Help out.
They will teach you. They will learn you some stuff, and you can help out.
That's right. Learn and help at the same time.
Right.
In fact, you can do that out at Northwoods Nursery, too.
No. yeah.
lots of help needed. I tell you, it's amazing.
Well, let's learn about mulberries.
Sure. Yeah, mulberries.
It's kind of a, is it a tree? Is it a bush? Is it a vine?
Yeah, it's a tree, typically. Occasionally, some varieties, especially black mulberry, can form more of a shrub-type plant, but tree. Mulberry is a tree. And it's pretty widespread around the world, actually.
Probably more spread wide than here.
Yes.
So to speak.
Yes. It's not native. There's no native mulberries to the Northwest. There's a native mulberry to America, Morus rubra, which is native into the central part of the U.S. and it's been selected. People have worked with it over the years. There's some varieties of Morus rubra and hybrids. Apparently, mulberries pretty easily hybridize, and so a lot of varieties get mixed up together, species get mixed up. But the Morus rubra is the Native American one. Morus alba, which doesn't refer to the fruit color, but really to the bud color.
Alba being the alba descriptor there.
Yeah, and it's native pretty much throughout Asia and Central Asia, and it's has varieties that have almost black fruit. Some have more purple or reddish fruit. Many have white fruit. In fact, we have several varieties that have white fruit right now at the nursery that are ripening, and it is about the earliest one to ripen as well.
Is it white when it's ripe?
Yes.
And what color is it when it's green? I love that. Unripe.
Well, yeah, when it's unripe, it's sort of pale.
White.
Yeah, kind of greenish, kind of pale green, I would guess, and then it turns white when it's ripened.
So kind of like blackberries, you know.
In a sense, yeah.
And speaking of blackberries, and we do have a call, so let's answer this one question first, and then we'll take the call. But describe the mulberry.
Yeah, right. It's like a blackberry on a tree.
Yeah.
It looks like a blackberry. It's a segmented fruit. There's a name for that. I can't remember it, when it has the little pieces, you know.
Druplets, maybe. Druplets, at least that's what something. They're called in the berry.
Yeah.
Raspberry or blackberry.
Right. So it like has the same form, same type of fruit, and quite juicy, typically. Mulberries are also juicy like blackberries.
And would you want to pick them wearing a white shirt?
A white fruit would probably be okay.
Yeah. From what I understand, they're very staining.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a funny thing that years ago, as many nurseries in California would advertise their fruitless mulberries, we would advertise our fruiting mulberries because you know, that was like a big deal in California. People would have mulberry trees and they would drop the fruit on their driveway. And of course, Californians wanting to have clean, pristine, clean driveways.
I see.
Didn't like that.
So they bred the fruit right out of mulberries.
Right.
What
would be the point, right?
Right. If you want a shade tree, maybe something else would be good.
Yeah, exactly right. This is a really attractive tree.
Oh, okay.
Mulberries,
so that's it.
Large foliage and look nice.
All right. Well, hang on to those thoughts here. We'll turn to the phone. And see what Tim has to say. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag. We're coming. Okay, Tim, are you there? Tim was there. Tim's gone now. Tim, call back if you have a question. Okay, so we've gone from now we have fruiting mulberries, or we're back to fruiting mulberries.
That's right.
What kind of space requirements? I mean, it's a tree, so it's a tree requirements.
There are some interesting forms of mulberry that don't take up a lot of room. A typical mulberry tree can get pretty large.
Yes, I've seen them quite large, yeah. 20, 30 feet.
Yep, or even bigger. I mean, an old tree could be 50 or 60 feet tall.
All right.
They can be pruned. It's easy to keep them down. They're not. The wood is easy to prune, and you just have to stay on it so they don't get quite so large. To get really good fruit, most of the trees are large, although there are some black mulberries that are smaller in form. But there's forms like there's a weeping mulberry and a contorted mulberry, both of which make much smaller plants. And while the fruit is not as big, perhaps, well, it's not as big as some of the other varieties, it's just still quite good to eat. And any of the listeners who are calling in from Minnesota or listening from Minnesota, some of these more unusual forms, especially the weeping mulberry, is hardy to minus 30 or below. So it's quite a hardy plant. Some varieties are not so hardy.
And how do you use the fruit?
Well, I eat it fresh. But this year I'm getting, now that I have a little more time, I'm watching these trees shed their fruit and copious amounts, and I just read recently about you can just take a sheet or fabric or something, put on the ground, and just let the fruit fall, and then collect it every couple of days. It almost like, you know, these last few days when that's hot sun, I think they would just dry right on in situ. But you can dry them. I've been in many Central Asian markets where mulberries were a popular item, dried mulberries. For sale,
like dried cranberries. I mean, is that, or raisins, or that dried, or
dried like that? But they're sweet. They're not like cranberries. I mean, they're very
well. Do people make jams and preserves?
And wine. It would. You know, you could imagine it sort of like using like you would a blackberry. It's very similar fruit that way. But the tree is, the tree is an attractive tree. And if you want a smaller one, I would choose one of the contorted or the weeping type right now, or a black mulberry would probably be a good one, although they're a little harder to find because they're harder to propagate.
Well, why do you say black mulberry? I mean, are there...
Black mulberry is Morris nigra, which is the species name. And it's a later ripening type. So in terms of ripening, the white mulberry or Morris alba ripens first and very early. I mean, it's probably as early as any fruit. This year is before strawberries. The mulberries are starting to fall. And so that's Morris alba. And then there's Morris rubra, which comes on a little bit later. And the variety that probably the best variety that I've discovered for general Northwest growing conditions is one called Illinois Everbearing, which by its name, you know, it's from central part of the U.S. And apparently it's a hybrid between Morris rubra and Morris alba, but it's very hardy and the fruit is larger than a typical Morris alba and is very good, very tasty.
So, okay. Well, that's mulberry.
That's mulberry.
I mean, you just plant it like any tree, but it's going to take sun. So
it likes sun.
It would be a special spot for it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, like I said, the ones like the contorted and the weeping could be planted in a much smaller area.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably not parking strip candidates, because that would drop the fruit on the sidewalk, and unless you stayed up with that.
Well, what's wrong with a purple sidewalk?
Well, it's nothing. It's the lawsuit. Someone who slips on those.
Well, they're actually not very slippery, I've noticed, because I walk through them every day.
Oh, I get stuck in your shoe treads.
I think it's mostly just the staining is the problem that people don't like about it. Those of us growing up of a certain age, you know, we could do put our T-shirts underneath them and just sort of do. Wouldn't that be kind of fun? You know, sort of like
tie-dyed
in place.
Yeah. Well, it seems kind of like one of those fruits from yesteryear. I mean, you hear about mulberries, but you know, I've had them, but not huge amounts of them.
I'm getting more interested in them again. I guess it's a way cycles work. You know.
Well, I said it was an old-fashioned. Yeah. Fruit. Maybe you're old fashioned.
Maybe it'll become new fashioned.
That's right.
We'll see what we can do.
Okay. That's mulberries. If you have any questions on mulberries, Jim's your man there, that's for sure. Or if you have questions on gardening, we would gladly take that. 503-231-8187. Well, let's head to a musical selection. Jim, all three of these have the same name, and they're actually the same song. But they're by three different artists from three different decades.
I thought you were just being lazy or something, going to play the same music.
It's a nice little tasty tune here. It's called Just a Little Bit. The first version here from a quite a nice CD called Organized. All-Star Tribute to the Hammond B3 Organ. Mm-hmm. Mike Finnegan, his version of Just a Little Bit.
All right.
Well, Jim says it's time to get back to work.
Yeah, too many donuts.
So we've got more of Just a Little Bit coming up. That was Mike Finnegan. Okay, we have a phone call. Italia, is that right? Yes. Yes, Italia. You're with the Dirtbag. Good morning.
Interested in sort of permaculture, food forest, food, you know,
sure.
Tree guilds. And I'm really interested in pawpaws and figs. And so I have a two-part question, like what varieties would really sort of thrive that you would recommend in the Northwest? And also I was wondering what types of, I don't know, underplanting or other shrubs or whatever that it might get along with or benefit from with those two.
Okay.
Fruit that I love so much.
Well, let's go with part A first.
Sure.
Okay.
Varieties.
Yeah. So pawpaws, the important thing with pawpaws, pretty important, is to get early ripening types, early to mid-season ripening. So that, because our, although who knows what's going to happen with global warming, but the yeah. At this point, because we don't have such warm evenings as they do back east, we want to make sure we get the fruit ripened. So the earliest ripening variety is one called Pennsylvania Golden. It's the one.
Okay.
That we have discovered that. And then another good variety is Sunflower.
Because do we not need two varieties?
You need two varieties.
Okay. So Italia, make note of that.
Right.
Okay.
Not just two plants, but two different varieties. So
okay.
Sunflower is a really good one. A newer selection from the Neil Peterson's breeding work. He's kind of a pawpaw aficionado for many years and has some newer patented varieties. It's called Shenandoah. It's
okay.
A very large fruit and ripens good enough in our climate. And it depends on where you live. I mean, we live out in the country, so we have cooler nights than you do in Portland or places.
Well, this would be Ridgefield.
Ridgefield,
so a little
okay.
Cooler.
Yeah. So I would definitely go for the earlier types. There's another one called NC1 that does well for us.
Okay.
And as far as quality of fruit, they're all pretty tasty, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I mean, if you were a super aficionado, mm-hmm. With pawpaw, you might be able to tell the differences between these. But I would say if you like pawpaws, you will like all of the ones
okay.
I mentioned.
Okay. Awesome.
Because I would say I'm an aficionado of, say, raspberries, and
right.
there's a big difference.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of research. I mean, on the subject. I know Kentucky State they do, but not for anything in the Northwest climate, really. I've been looking.
Yeah, so. Jim's probably not more knowledgeable than anybody in the Northwest about growing.
Yeah, that's
pawpaws.
What I'm calling.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I appreciate your question. We're actually going to a pawpaw conference in Kentucky in very late August. Sort of an international event. Some folks will be from different parts of the world coming to it. But we've been growing them for quite a while. And as I said, those varieties that I mentioned, and there's a couple of other ones, have done well for us. And pawpaws are sort of interesting, sort of like bananas in a sense. If you can get the fruit to a certain stage of ripeness, even though it's firm on the tree, it will ripen off the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
are any of the varieties that you mentioned quick, faster to, get established?
Precocious, as we say.
Come into bearing. The earliest, the most precocious variety that I've discovered is one called Prolific, and it's also another one that ripens early. And so if you could find that one, that one might be a good one.
Oh, okay.
I want to just interject here in that a friend of mine grows pawpaws, and his wife stopped by the other day and mentioned they had a lot of suckers coming up around the one variety,
mm-hmm.
and would I be interested in one? I said, oh, sure, I'll make it over there sometime. Well, I got a call from the husband today, my friend, Charles, and he said that essentially those are real hard or almost impossible to propagate from a sprout.
Yeah.
Has that been your experience?
Yeah.
And then he said, with a little search, he said, they do best by grafting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. And so, when I hear about a lot of sprouts coming from the base of a pawpaw tree, it makes me.
I don't know if it's the base or
it would be
one or 2 feet away or whatever.
Yeah, and I've got quite a few trees, and I never see them coming up away from the tree.
Oh.
And when they come up at the base of the tree, it makes me nervous, because it's typically the sign that the top of the tree is dying. And it's amazing how many will do that. So, I mean, it's not always the case, but I would be...
What would be the signs of the dying? Sorry about this, Talia. We'll get back to you.
No, this is great.
Well, low vigor, you know, not a lot of leaf growth, just generally not a happy-looking plant, and eventually it'll just break off. Pawpaws are funny trees. They're not very sturdy in some ways. If they're hurt in some way or another, they can collapse.
Well, are they not grafted then?
They're grafted.
They're grafted to what kind of rootstock?
Pawpaw.
Oh, I see.
So what's coming up from the base
it's going to be rootstock. Right? Anyway, no matter where it's coming up, it's going to be from rootstock.
Is it true, though, by the way, that you should maybe shade them the first couple years?
You know,
especially with our weather.
I had heard that, and maybe back east that's true, but I haven't found it to be the case here.
Okay.
Don't worry about it. One thing I do recommend doing, so for several years we would paint the trunk with white paint, which is typically done on fruit trees to keep sun scald burn from occurring. And even despite that, we have some sun scald, and it happens we see it on the southwest sides, which is real obvious because mm-hmm. that's where you'd be getting the most heat, the most intense heat.
Right.
And so what I'm trying this year, started last year, is using tree protectors on them. So, and if you may know what I'm talking about, they're basically white and black plastic. You put the white side out, the black plastic in. Cheap ones you can get I don't know where you'd get the cheap ones easily, but so a lot of garden stores might have them. But they like 2 feet up the trunk, if you put that tree protector around there, I think you'll have good success in preventing the sun scald.
Oh, okay. Great. That's
all right. So then we need to move on to part two. A point one, which is plants for underneath.
And I might also mention, if I just one last thing on the pawpaw and the sun scald, if the tree has low branches, then that typically is not a problem. So we typically prune ours to be a more of a tree type trunk. But if you let the branches, low branches, grow out, they'll naturally shade the trunk. And I think that's how pawpaw grows in nature, is typically shaded.
Oh, okay.
So you don't have that problem. So figs, in your region, there's one variety I would plant, and then you might choose something else to play around with. But Desert King is the one that you should plant there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably already know that. But that is definitely the Northwest fig. It is so good and productive and easy
mine
to grow.
Mine are already larger than golf balls.
Yeah. Yeah, so
are there any purple varieties that might do?
Sure. So the big thing with Desert King is it ripens in the summer on the old wood, and that's why it's so successful of the type of fig it is. So it ripens a big crop only once a year, and it comes in late July, early August typically. So the darker figs, there's a small one called Negroni, which has smaller but very intensely dark fruit, and it's a fall ripening fig. And if you had a warm, I would give it a nice warm spot so it can get plenty of heat, next to a wall, southern facing wall or something like that. Another dark fig, Vern's Brown Turkey, is a brown fig, very large. With the difference between
doesn't that fruit twice?
Yes.
Well, you know, technically.
Technically,
but you hardly get a.
The first crop is not as good as the second crop, as big a crop. And that's why Desert King is different, because it's only got the one crop, but it's the first one.
And it'll put out a second little crop, but it's never...
If ever ripens.
Right, or amounts to anything. They're just little dried up fruits.
There's actually an interesting story with that second crop, but in nature, it gets pollinated, and it will ripen if it's pollinated. But I was in California recently looking at a poster they had made of fig varieties. And so you looked at all these beautiful fig varieties, and there was Desert King, this little tiny fruit. And I said, when did you take these pictures? And they took them in the fall. So they took the picture of the second crop, you know, and it wasn't really accurate representation of Desert King.
From an evolutionary standpoint, it makes sense to me that the fruit would get pollinated then, because it's it would be fertilized fruit, and presumably that fig could be dropped someplace else and grow from a seed and then propagate itself.
In Italy, there's also, I mean, as we traveled around Italy, we saw all sorts of seedling figs from, but in here in the Northwest, we don't have the wasp that does the pollinating. And so the figs don't get pollinated, and the ones that we grow here are all self-fertile. They're all common figs. And
So they don't need to be.
They don't need to be pollinated.
Right. Well, and then to answer the last part of your question, what kind of guild plants could there be? And boy, in my estimate or my experience with the Desert King, hardly anything grows below it. I mean, you know what fig leaves are, and they just create so much shade. You know, they're big, and they create so much shade that I used to have strawberries planted under mine, and hardly anything. Strawberries don't grow under there. They've petered out. And I've tried potatoes under there one year, just thought, well, I have bare ground here. And, you know, the plants grew, but they didn't really produce any fruit to speak of.
And it's really important to not let grass grow underneath the tree.
Right.
So, yeah. All right. Well, that's some information
there. Okay, well, thank you so much. This has been great.
Good luck.
Thanks for the call.
All right. Yeah.
Okay, let's do... Good morning, Wayne. You're with the Dirtbag.
Hi, my name's Wayne, and I've got two kiwi plants. And I got them growing. I got them off the fence. I was burning them up all summer. And they flowered really good this year, and they seemed like they had small kiwis coming on, and now there's nothing there. And I'm just wondering what I'm missing or what I need to do.
So have you had fruit before?
Nope.
Have you have two. You have a male and a female?
Well, I haven't looked, but I'm not sure.
Well, that could be the problem. Jim?
Yep. Yeah, I think you could go to the One Green World website, onegreenworld.com. We used to have a photograph there that showed the male and female flowers. They're quite different in structure, and you can identify them. So you do have two plants?
Or, yes, I do.
Okay. So hopefully there's a male and a female, and it may be that only one of them bloomed. It's possible the other one's waiting another year before it does its thing.
Are these relatively new, Wayne?
Yeah, one's a couple of years old, and that didn't work, so we got a second one. And now we're getting tons of foliage, but... we had lots of flowers, but it never seemed to go anywhere.
You had flowers on both? Maybe. We stumped him. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you have flowers on both plants?
I thought we did.
There's probably still there. I mean, it's not, I think the flowering is still going on, or at least there should be some vestiges of flowers.
Okay, well, I'll check when I get home.
Yeah, check both plants to see if you've got flowers on them, and then if the flowers look the same, that would be bad. If there's different, then hopefully one is a male and one's a female, and I can't. It's hard to describe them over the radio, but
look at the pictures. That'd be the best.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will do that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Some wear skirts and some wear kilts, so you can't really tell. Okay. Are we ready for round two of just a little bit? Sure. This is from this edition of Just a Little Bit is from this decade. Steve Miller Band. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Stevie Guitar Miller. He put out a couple of albums, 4 or 5 years ago. And they're both just, they covered a lot of old stuff. And it's just kind of a good party CDs. But this one called, the album is called, the CD, just, Let Your Hair Down. And he's got a picture of the rabbit on his head. Let Your Hair Down.
Cool.
But it's spelled hair.
Right.
Sure. So just a little bit with Stevie Guitar Miller Band.
Just a teeny weeny bit of your love. Turn your lamp slip me a kiss. Turn your lamp down low. Babe, you know I can't resist. For peace of mind, please say you'll never leave me, not until the end of time. From just a teeny weeny bit, just a teeny weeny bit of your love. Turn your lamp down low, babe, you know I can't resist.
Stevie Guitar Miller. Just a little bit. How about that? Just a little bit.
Nice.
Okay. We've got a couple of phone calls, but we're going to get in a quick stumper here first. And shall we hear from World Party to let us know that it's time for the stumper?
We
need to have that then. Okay. Tammy, hit it. Okay, Jim's going to handle the stumper today.
Okay. All right. Well, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Leaves of a tree are used to feed an insect that makes a popular and valuable fabric. What is the tree and what is the fabric?
Okay. If you know the answer to that, give us a call, the same number that you would call and talk to our ace engineer, Tammy, 503-231-8187. The insect, the tree. Okay, the tree and the fabric. Okay, great. Okay, now back to the phones. Sean, good morning. Sean, you're with the Dirtbag.
Good morning. I understand somebody had just called about a kiwi, but mine's a different question.
It's all right.
It's a stumper. A few years ago, I bought some kiwis from you, Jim, at in Albany, and so got the male and female going up to an arbor. And last year, they both reached to about 6 feet. And this year, the male shot up, but the female is absolutely stuck at 6 feet. Started putting on a few small berries, and I took those off, and I fed some. How do you pronounce it? The mycorrhizal fungi?
The mycorrhizal.
Mycorrhizal, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
To try to get the roots going, and I've fed it, I've watered it, and it just doesn't want to do anything. And so I'm kind of wondering a couple things. Number one, obviously, is it in the soil, and part of that is that because both of them are planted right at the base of two posts supporting the arbor and right up against the patio, which was here at the house that I bought, I don't know if there's something coming out of the concrete or something they maybe had in the soil in that particular place. But as I said, both vines are only about 7 feet apart. And the male is going crazy. The female is stuck.
Are they pressure-treated posts?
Yeah.
I don't know that that would have anything to do with it, but they are treated with something.
Yeah, and the thing is that, you know, the female, the leaves are small. I mean, they you know, I was even wondering if it was going to come back this year kind of thing. So it came back, leafed out, but the leaves have stayed exactly the same size. There's no new growth showing up on any of the vine, even at the base. And the male, though, the leaves are bigger, it looks healthier, and it's all the way up to the top of the arbor. And so, wanting to go over and meet her, but she doesn't want to do anything.
Sure. It's pretty hard to get, huh? So, yeah, exactly. So let me ask you a couple of questions. What's your watering regime, and what's on top of the soil where the plants are, if anything?
Well, the irony is, you know, I did a lot of work over the last couple of years killing off a lot of grass and laying down a ton of compost and leaf compost on top of the soil. It drains really well. When I go to it, it doesn't seem to be a sign of like impacted soil, because when I water it, the water just goes straight down. It doesn't pool or anything.
How much do you water it?
Well, I water it enough to keep it, you know, obviously healthy and alive. I mean, I don't know, in this heat too, you know, even though it's established down below, I still water it really healthily at least once a week.
Well, what I would suggest, my first suggestion is to, so the mulch is like a layer on top of the soil and several inches thick, or?
Oh, yeah, because one year I laid down a ton of compost.
And what?
And then the following year I laid down a thick layer of leaf compost, but it's all settled, you know, and it's, so anyway. But
did you,
did you, what originally was planted.
Did you make this compost yourself?
No, I didn't. No, it came from Republic. And I know, you know, it's like it's, you know, it's the general compost most everybody uses, and obviously it's going to have some stuff in it. But everything else I have growing, and I've planted a hell of a lot of stuff in the yard since then, is thriving. But it seems to be, I think it's something in the soil or at the base coming from either
Did you do the exact same treatment for both plants, and how far apart are they?
Yeah, like I said, they're only about 7 feet, I'd say, apart.
And both of them are right by a pressure-treated post.
Yeah, and they're both planted up against the pressure-treated posts that support the arbor. So, but like I said, as everything else seems to be growing, you know, just fine. And I've planted a lot of stuff.
Okay.
But what I was wondering, maybe was the vine sensitive to either the concrete that was poured for the arbor, or maybe something that was there beforehand when the patio was put in? I mean, obviously, those are kind of impossible for you to.
What did you use to kill the grass?
I laid down just cardboard.
Okay.
Cardboard and put the compost.
Well, what do you think, Jim?
Okay, so in my experience, about 90% of plant problems result from water too much, and maybe the other 9% is from too little, and 1% from some other factors. But so when you already have a mulch on there, a thick mulch, and I would definitely not water that plant until you can feel some dryness underneath the mulch.
Okay. Well, I don't, you know, I made it sound like I don't absolutely water like once a week. I mean, I got it when I first put them in, obviously kept them watered, got them well established, and then letting them go, and they were doing just fine. And then when this started happening, I just, you know, tried watering and putting in feed, you know.
Right.
Fish fertilizer, and I also have a really good organic starter compound.
You touched on something there.
Okay. Now, I've only used that once.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't use it anymore.
Okay.
I don't think you need it right now.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. What we want to see is that plant to come back to life. And I think I had an experience with a friend of mine who has a commercial kiwi orchard, and a few years ago went over and talked to him about problems he was having. And he had a heavy mulch on his kiwis, hardy kiwis in this case. And they were just getting too wet. I mean, they just were, you know, he was watering them. Would be, if you had bare soil, probably be fine. But because that all that mulch was on top, it was holding the moisture in, and they weren't able to breathe.
So ironically, though, the one is doing great, you know, because if I'm going to water one, I'm going to water both of them. But it's not like I've been overdoing. Like I said, once they were established, I wasn't touching whatever. It was only thinking, well, maybe they need help, and it was really to initially fertilize them. I'll let them kind of get stressed, and of course with this heat and everything, things tend to dry out. But
well,
overall,
don't let them get stressed.
No, I don't. But so that's the thing is, like, you know, at this point, what to do? The one is really thriving, the other one's not. Should I take some soil from there and do a soil test?
I would first, you know, before you do anything more, I just watch your watering, and don't water if underneath that mulch it's moist, don't water.
Yeah.
Just stop.
That was one of the points that I was going to make on our gardening in hot weather, in that I have a bed of squash. some winter squash, some summer squash. And my neighbor has been giving me now his chicken manure cage droppings and the straw and shavings. And I'd been putting it on this one bed that I now planted the squash in. And I had in the fall had put down leaves, and then I've covered this bed with the chicken coop sweepings. And I had to dig down, you know, 2 to 3 to 4 inches in some case to get to dirt where I planted them. And I recently just started watering just because I'm of the way my system is. I had to water another bed, and that one's on the same system. But I really didn't need to water, even during this hot weather.
Yeah.
The plants would kind of look wilty during the hottest time, but they would perk right up. And if I scraped down there, and it was moist soil under all of that mulch.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, I'm assuming these roots, I mean, that's the thing, too, is they're on, if you want to call it, kind of the shady side of the post, so they're roots protected, but they get overall great sun exposure.
Yeah, well, roots shouldn't.
So it's not like they get direct sun right on the base of them all day.
Yeah, you know? Well, so I'd try what Jim suggested and
just let them sit.
Well, no, you have to check and see.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling that it's going to be a while before that
yeah.
especially the one that's not growing well, is not going to need water because it's not transpiring any.
Yeah.
It's just sitting
right.
there, you know.
Right. I just didn't want to have to think about, God, I hate to go through this whole thing and find out for whatever reason it just won't go.
Yeah. We'll try that first.
Hence the term hardy.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll dig down and see what's going on down there.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you much.
Okay. Let's stay with the phones. Good morning, Claire.
Yes, good morning. I'm very interested in everything you've been saying, especially with the last gardener, maybe too much water. We've had several days of 100, so I've been stepping up the water. And I have Kentucky Wonder beans. They have 4 leaves on them. They're very lusty. But all of a sudden, they got like leaf curl. I could not see anything with my naked eye. So it got some pretty bad leaf curl. So I put some Natural Guard insect soap on last night because today's a cool day, very cool. And I thought, well, that'll be the safer time to do it. Now I'm thinking maybe I got all those insect problems with too much water. We have a lot of leaf mulch in our soil, probably half leaf mulch and half clay. We do this every year. We get leaf mulch from a farmer. He composts it for several years, and it's almost like chocolate cake by the time you get
it.
And it's phenomenal soil. And so our peas are almost 7 feet tall. They've done very well in the soil and with the amount of watering we're doing. But the beans, I planted them May 18th. They're lusty starting, but then...
Well, the biggest problem that I always have with beans are slugs.
No,
and they
have a natural slug bait around there. They're not too interested in it.
Well, they will. The bait or the beans?
They're not interested in the beans because I had more slug bait around our gourmet lettuce in the earlier spring in April and all. They were very interested in that because it was tender. But they don't seem to be much interested in beans. I have a few granules along because I have hay on the sides.
Yeah, well, what I would do is one of these mornings when it's, or evenings, when it's, you know, kind of be rainy or something, is just go out there and look and see if these are tiny, tiny slugs, 16th of an inch. They're babies.
Okay, I did see that on our gourmet lettuce in April. I would rinse it with a little bit of salt water to get them to float up to the top. But I've not seen anything.
Well, have you looked?
Because usually we'd be more of a munching, wouldn't there be? Or not? Would they make the leaf curl? Make the leaf curl?
They can. I mean, depending on how the plant responds to it and where these slugs rasp the leaf.
Oh, okay.
That's just a natural response. It damages some part of the leaf, and the other part then keeps growing, and it curls.
Oh, okay.
But you can confirm this. Just go out and look for the things. Get your pruners in hand.
Mm-hmm.
Because these are small plants, you know, 1 to 2 inches, probably no more than that.
Yeah, they're just beginning their fourth set of leaves right now.
Well,
they have a nice dark green. We've had good success with Kentucky Wonder before.
Yeah, well, that's my guess is slugs. That's the only thing that I have a problem with.
Slugs,
these little baby guys, you know what it is. So try that.
Okay, I appreciate the garden show. I've been enjoying it. It's the first time I've heard you folks, and you're doing such a great job.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Tim, that's right. We forgot about a garden stumper. Tim, you have an answer.
It's the same Tim.
Tim, he's monopolizing our phone lines.
So is the tree the mulberry, the and the animal the silkworm, and the product silk?
You got it.
That's exactly
ding,
right.
Ding, ding.
Also, you can toast up the worms. A little bit of sesame oil and garlic and
etc. When did you do that?
I haven't done that.
I see. One thing that's very interesting, and when I was traveling in Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan, the mulberries are pruned really hard. You drive down a street, and it's really quite amazing because they're just like stumps, basically, with small, very short branches, and they've pruned them for the leaves. And this is in May.
Oh.
That's the big crop there is mulberry leaves to feed the silkworms.
Huh.
You ever run across people who eat the silkworms?
Nope, never heard that one.
Must be a vicious rumor.
I read something in one of the local papers here in the last couple of months of some startup business who got some funding, and they were using crickets. Is that it?
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
To make flour, yeah.
Yeah, very high protein, supposedly.
Yeah.
Well, silkworm flour is just around the corner then.
Probably.
Well, a good job.
Okay,
ask you a question that I was going to ask you before, but I felt I was being too selfish.
It's all right. You got the right answer.
Okay. Well, in the 80s, I used to teach permaculture along with empowerment. Combined permaculture, you know, the fruit trees, the berries, the everything. And now I can't do it. And I was wondering if there's any groups who are into permaculture who might be willing to help somebody maintain their garden.
What do you live in? Where do you live, roughly? In Portland?
Salem.
Yeah. Yeah. There are permaculture guilds. Sorry for that pun. Groups. And I don't know. And you might go to the In Good Tilth Oregon Tilth website to see. Contacts. I don't have any contacts for down there.
Okay. I didn't know who else to ask.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a good start though.
Yeah, Oregon Tilth will be good. Yeah.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you.
Good job. All right. Tammy's going back to the phone here, but we're going to postpone swarming, and we've talked a little bit about hot weather gardening. Do you want to say anything about gardening with the fruits in the hot weather? I mean, besides wearing a hat.
Right. You know, there's one thing I did want to mention. We're talking about watering, and it's probably something I'd like to talk about every meeting, every show, because, you know, when we talk about plants and water and soil, it takes a long time for soil to get dry. And when you put a plant in the ground, once it gets established, nature is going to give you some buffer there. The opposite of that is plants in pots. Mm-hmm. Where you're totally in charge of what's going on in that pot, and that can dry out pretty quickly, and you can have major death problems with that. And so
within hours.
Yes. So hot weather. So the thing I'd probably mention most about hot weather gardening is watch your potted plants. The ones in the ground aren't going to be such an issue normally, but the ones in pots could
particularly if they are mulched like we've touched upon. I mean, that's just it's good on so many levels.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Keeps the soil cool and holds the moisture and keeps the weeds down.
Right.
So, but pots.
And provides nutrients.
Yeah.
Watch
the pots.
Right. Okay. And the kind of the other rule of thumb is to offer, when we're watering, deep, long-term deep soakings.
Right.
But that's different when you have beans that are, you know, I can't remember her name now, but had, you know, four leaves on there, or seedlings that are just coming up in that first layer of soil can dry out very quickly, even though it's not in a pot, and because the roots aren't well established. And so that might require even to
waterings a day.
Right.
To keep that soil moist.
And with not a lot of water. I mean, you don't need to, like, soak it. So just keep that surface layer moist so that the seeds will germinate and be happy.
Right. Or maybe even worse is that if they're just starting to germinate and then they dry out, then that's the curtains for the plant.
That's right.
It's one thing if the seed never germinates or hasn't germinated yet and it gets hot. Well, no big deal.
Right.
Probably so. All right. Good morning, Richard, with the Dirtbag. Okay, Richard. Richard's on line two.
I got grapes, and grapevine is about 26, 28 years old, something like that. It's big. And I was going to trellis it on this fence. It's like built, you know, it's like 2x4s on and 4x4 posts.
Okay.
Do you have any advice about the best way to do it? And is it too late to trim it way back and prune it way back? And I guess you say train it along the fence?
Well, yes and no. I mean, no and yes. It's not too late to train it, but or to prune it, I should say. But for training, you'll want to have at least one of those cordons kept long so you have it to go along the fence. But you can prune off the excess lateral growth even now. I've done that on mine. I prune them back to the grape clusters just because they're hanging over other parts of my garden and me, and that it'll weep a little bit there, but doesn't hurt the plant.
Yeah, so, there's a lot of it going up, runners going up the cherry tree and the tree and that.
So save your favorite one or the one that's in the best location for training it where you want it to go. And the rule of thumb for grapes when you're pruning in the winter, February generally is when I do it, is that we're taking off about 90% of last year's growth.
That's a lot.
That's right, which is why you have a jungle now, because you probably haven't been pruning off that much.
You got a pretty good idea of what it looks like.
Right, so they are very trainable. And once you get them pruned to a structure that you like, you can just keep every year just going back to pretty much the same place and pruning it off.
What I'm picking up from what you said is find the strongest or the best looking.
Or the one that's in the best location for you.
And just take one of them and run it along the fence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like one big section or
one there. Long. Yeah. And then next year from that, and this is all this year's growth that you'll be training along the fence. Next year, that cordon, that branch that you've tied to your fence or whatever, will send out laterals, and that's where the fruit will form.
So I could just like take that and maybe put some staples in and some ties or...
Yeah, probably ties, not staples, because that branch will get large. Oh, I mean, right now it's only, you know, half an inch max, but it can be 3 inches.
So I guess I could just put some nails in there and then tie it.
Yeah, just use string.
Plastic ties or something like that.
But what I fear might happen is that you forget about where those plastic ties are, and the vine just keeps growing bigger and bigger, and it gets to that plastic ties diameter and girdles itself, and then that's not a good thing.
So a piece of rope, that's better.
Yeah, although that can girdle it too, but it's a little more forgiving, and it might break or rot.
Yeah. Paying attention to it is probably a good idea. Yeah.
So I'll just take the one that's in the best location and that looks the healthiest and try to train it along the top of the fence.
Just
put some nails in the top and then just...
Yeah, just cradle it in there, yeah.
Just tie it.
Yep.
Can I ask you one more thing just right quick?
Quickly.
Is it easy to grow kiwis from cuttings?
To start them, to propagate them?
If I got some cuttings of kiwis, would I have much luck trying to...
Give it a try. Hardwood cuttings, you could just try putting them in some real light soil or potting mix. Propagation mix you can buy commercially. Give it a try, but it's a lot easier to do them in a greenhouse with mist is how we typically do it. Leafy cuttings this time of year.
All right.
They're not so easy to do the other way, but
we got to wrap up.
All right, I'll jump off then.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Thanks for the call.
Okay, Jim. That's it. Mulberries.
Mulberries, right.
Silk.
Silk, silkworms.
And how it works all together. Isn't that something amazing?
It's crazy.
Yeah. All right, so swarming will have to wait till next month. It'll be the end of swarming season. Maybe I'll see you on the tour to hives. Maybe we'll have a swarm during that period on the 24th.
That would be exciting.
It is.
Yeah.
I had a swarm, not for my hives, I don't think, but it showed up into one of my boxes that I just had out.
Wow.
Day before yesterday.
It just came on its own?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a pretty good size one. I'd say about 15,000 to 20,000 bees.
Whew.
Yes. Whew. Always something exciting going on. All right. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Glenn.
Glad you're back in town. Tammy, thank you. Ace engineer there. This is Glenn Andreessen. We'll be back in 5 weeks. That's...
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from The Art of Living, presenting Get Happy Portland, a two-day immersive experience of breathing techniques and meditation by global humanitarian Sri Sri Ravi Shankar. Get Happy Portland takes place July 5th and 6th at the Oregon Convention Center. Tickets and information are available at gethappyportland.org. And that's it for the Dirt Bag. It's noon. It's almost 12:01, and time for